Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Ben Ryland. Tomorrow is the final day of the 73rd Venice International Film Festival, and one of our film critic friends, Jason Solomons, has kindly nipped back over to the UK a little bit early to give us some of his highlights from this year's event. Jason, welcome to the programme and welcome back to London. In a few words, tell us, how was Venice? Rather warm, I imagine.
It was hot this year. Normally, Venice is sort of the signal, because these film festivals, like Cannes at the beginning of May, is designed to sort of make the season start a week early. Venice was designed to sort of prolong the summer seasons, because all the Italians go to the Venice Lido and stay on the beach, and then they normally go as soon as September starts and the weather breaks. So Venice was designed to just kind of squeeze another week out of that sort of holiday factor and give the deck chair attendants some sort of money. And now it's become a fixture in the world calendar. And this year it just didn't break the weather, and it was 30 degrees, 31 degrees all the way through. So people were arriving rather sweatily, which you don't need sweating Italians next to you too much in screenings in Venice, I have to say. But it was very hot and the air conditioning broke a couple of times in one of the rooms. So teething problems for the newly built Venice Film Festival. They were going to spend a lot of money rebuilding the famous Palazzo of Cinema, but they found asbestos in the sort of soil there, so they couldn't really do what they wanted to. So they've erected a few new buildings. There's a new called Sala Giardino, which is a big red building, which is a sort of new set. They were still soldering the seats on for a screening I went to. People were like falling off their seats because it wasn't quite ready yet, but they've fixed that now, so that's fine. And the big screening room, the Sala da Cena, has been kind of revamped and looks much smarter than it used to just be a tent, really. But the air conditioning wasn't quite as kind of cool as it might be, so people were just fanning themselves away and getting in the way of your screen, and people were just telling people to stop, put their programs down. Don't fan, I'm trying to watch the screen here. But other than that, Venice was very, very pleasant, as it always is. One of the, I think it's the nicest of the world film festivals.
Well, that is good to know. Well, we have so many films to get through today, we'll have to jump right into it. We're going to start, though, with what's emerged as a favourite among many of the attendees over there, which is Damien Chazelle's La La Land. Now, Chazelle is, of course, the director behind Whiplash. Were you surprised to hear that he was making a musical? I mean, we don't really get musicals that often anymore.
No, which is always a shame, because I'm a massive fan of musicals when they come, and they always seem to have to come with some sort of proviso that, we're making a knowing and winking nod to the fact that it's a musical. You can't just wander around anymore and burst into song like you used to be able to do in the 30s, 40s and 50s.
Yeah, it's such a shame, isn't it?
I know. I mean, that's what I do in real life, so I don't know why they don't think they can do it on screen. But I tell you what, La La Land is a film that made me want to burst into song, into raptures about it, because I loved it. I'm still walking on air. It opened the festival now 12 days ago, and I just think it is absolutely brilliant. I haven't stopped smiling since seeing La La Land.
Let's give a little taster then. Here's a clip.
She captured a feeling, sky with no ceiling, the sunset inside a frame. Here's to the ones who dream, foolish as they may seem. Here's to the hearts that ache. Here's to the mess we make.
So that's Emma Stone there as the character Mia singing Audition, or The Fools Who Dream. Jason, tell us a little bit more about the film itself. So obviously it's a musical. It has gathered a lot of attention simply for being a musical and starring Ryan Gosling. What exactly is going on in the film?
Ryan Gosling was a mate of Justin Timberlake's, and they were in the Mickey Mouse Club. The boy can sing and dance. You know,
I
they teach those Mouseketeers those things. You know, he's not Fred Astaire, but he can dance good. And she's no Ginger Rogers, but they're a sort of 21st century version of those, because they do a lot of kind of rather sort of lovely little dancing, not big sort of tap dances, but lovely little bits of movement all over LA, on the freeway, on the way to a party, up at the Griffith Observatory, where they kind of fly amongst the stars. You know, it's a real kind of fairy tale of LA. But she's a wannabe actress, aspiring actress, as is everyone in LA, of course. And he's a wannabe jazz club owner, and they sort of meet, and can they both follow their dreams whilst falling in love? Can they make love work? So in a way, it's a terribly romantic film, but it's also a sort of anti-romance as well. So, and it's one of those knowing, I suppose, the musical more in the way of the Jacques Demy films like Umbrellas of Cherbourg or the Demoiselle de Rochefort, where the songs tell a part of the story as well. So you wouldn't say that you come out humming the tunes, because they're sort of part of the music. But the dancing is terribly witty. The choreography is done by Mandy Moore, not the Mandy Moore who was the film actress, but the one who does Dancing with the Stars in America. She's kind of top choreographer at the moment, and it's very witty. And it kind of, you know, it's a sort of film where they're wandering off from a party up in LA and looking for their car. Everyone's got got a Prius. It's kind of very modern about that. And she wants to take her shoes off, you know, like girls do, because they have been in high heels all night. And she takes them off and she puts tap shoes on instead of, like, you know, Converse or something. So she puts tap shoes on, and that gives them a reason to kind of go into a little tap number high above the sparkling lights of LA. It's that referential knowingness, the primary colours of it all, that I thought was so enchanting. And the leads are utterly adorable. You know, I can't see in what category this film can't get nominated other than supporting actors, because there's no one else really in there. But I mean, for the music, the costume, the look, the script is great, the performances are terrific. I mean, I think Emma Stone has been a big star for a while now, but this cements her as a kind of, I mean, if those two of them can be loved anymore, but you know, everyone loves Ryan Gosling. I mean, but by the end of this, every generation is going to fall in love with both of them.
Well, you don't get much more praise than that. That is La La Land, which is out on December the 16th in the US and January the 13th here in the United Kingdom. And of course, for more on musicals in the cinema, you can tune into last week's edition of The Cinema Show here on Monocle 24. Now, let's move along to another movie from the festival, which is France. Now, this takes place in the German mountains in 1919 and centres around an encounter between Anna, a young woman mourning the death of her fiancé, and a mysterious French man who she finds at his grave. Jason, tell me more about this one.
Yes, this is based on a Maurice Rostand play, which actually became a film for Ernst Lubitsch in the 30s called Broken Lullaby. Neither of which I've seen. I've never seen Broken Lullaby. I've never seen the Maurice Rostand play. So Ozon liberally adapts, as he often does, actually. He's done, you know, Ruth Rendell stories. He's done plays before. He's done Fassbender movies as well. So it's very Francois Ozon, this, but it's his first time working in the German language. And it's really about sort of misunderstandings. Why is this young Frenchman, played by Pierre Nini, who we saw in the Yves Saint Laurent biopic
recently? I thought he was tremendous in that.
He's really good, you know. He is really one of the bright young stars. He's a very buttoned-down performance. He sort of looks like a bit like Adrian Brody did in The Pianist in this. He's got this one kind of element to him. And Ozon has discovered another gem of an actress in Paula Beer, a newcomer from Germany, who's fantastic as well. He sort of keeps alive the memory of her deceased fiancé, France, who died in the trenches. And we don't quite know what the relationship between Adrien and Francis, and they're the young sort of grieving fiancé has to sort of work out why. And this whole German village can't stand the thought of a Frenchman in their midst, so they kind of everyone hates him. And then she follows him back to Paris, and she too is kind of under suspicion for being a German. It's a very sort of cagey romance, but I thought this was elegant, beautiful. I really loved France. I thought it was definitely Ozon, who's done fantastic things like The New Girlfriend and of course Eight Women all the way back. He churns them out. Ozon, I think this is his most maturely crafted film, and it wouldn't surprise me if this isn't with a real shot of the Golden Lion at Venice. It's the sort of film that the head of the jury, Sam Mendes, would think was really, really, you know, finely done, and he's right. I loved it.
Absolutely. Well, he's undoubtedly an auteur, a modern auteur. That is France, which is out now in France, fittingly enough, and is continuing on the film festival circuit with some screenings in Toronto and London. Film festivals also on the way. Now, of course, we have so many films packed into this edition of the Arts Review, so we'll race right ahead to Arrival. A little bit of sci-fi for us. The film stars Amy Adams as a linguist who is brought on board as part of a worldwide effort to protect Earth from the arrival of 12 oval alien pods around the globe. Now, if you can have a look at the trailer to get an idea for what I mean, but here's a little taster with a bit of a clip.
Are you dreaming in their language?
Possible. They're prodding us to fight among ourselves.
This is just a way to force us to work together for once.
It's more complicated than that.
How is it more complicated?
Russia just executed one of their own to keep their secret.
Got 21 hours
before they start global war.
So how do we clarify their intentions?
I go back in.
Why does this feel worse?
Now, just on the face of it, Jason, this actually sounds like it could be very, very intelligent, because we have actually had, quite recently, a lot of people talking about how the exploration of space could potentially spark some sort of new war as people start to try and hone in on some of the reserves and some of the resources that might be situated in places far, far away. Now, on the face of it, it looks like Arrival might be picking up on that. Tell me, how intelligently does it tackle some of those?
Yeah, I mean, we've had those issues in, say, Avatar, was about that as well. And we've had issues of contact before, Jodie Foster's film, the Robert Zemeckis film, where she was the first person to make contact with the aliens. We've had E.T. as well, for God's sake, let's not forget. And this is sort of in that vein, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where they invented the do-do-do-do-do to talk to the aliens.
So I suppose we've had a bit of a drought when it comes to intelligent sci-fi for a little while now. So
what happens to it is very interesting, because Christopher Nolan tried it with Interstellar, a bit of intelligent sci-fi down the black hole. But the problem is with these intelligent sci-fi is that they get intelligent, and then at some point someone says, yeah, but Amy Adams needs to have like a baby or needs to have like a lover, that's all, otherwise we're just not going to get the human angle. And I'm actually a bit fed up of those, because I think those are kind of, you know, sort of sops to Hollywood screenwriting. I think what you need is full-on intelligence, which Arrival is, directed by Denis Villeneuve. It really is, for most of its runtime, a very intelligent exploration of, can we communicate with aliens? What would we say if we met them? How would we communicate with them? And the bit where they start talking, you know, the aliens don't talk, they kind of do this sort of strange sign language, which Amy has to deconstruct with her kind of linguistic team. I thought that was great. I love films about linguistics and language, and what would we say if, or could we understand them? Would we be saying the same thing? All that was very clever. All the stuff about, then suddenly it gets a little bit time-bending in Interstellar. For me, I'm just not a sci-fi fan enough for that stuff. I think it's hogwash. And for me, it's the sort of film that leads you up the garden path, and you think, oh, it's great, and then it does this ending, and you're, what just happened? Now I've got to see it again to work out if it makes sense. And do you know what? I don't want to see it again. So Arrival annoyed me. But for about 90 minutes, it was brilliant.
Oh, for 90 minutes, it's brilliant. Mm. Arrival will begin to roll out in cinemas around the world in November. And now I'm very glad we get to talk about this, because I'm looking forward to this one indeed. Now, Amy Adams was a frequent face at this year's festival, as she also stars in this film that we're talking about now, Nocturnal Animals. This time she's alongside Jake Gyllenhaal as her husband, who turns up with a book manuscript that he wants to publish. Now, of course, Nocturnal Animals is from the director, Tom Ford, his follow-up to the wonderful film, I thought it was just wonderful, A Single Man, which came out quite a few years ago now.
7 years now, yeah.
How does this one fare? Because, I always admire the
Your
audacity.
Your glasses, Ben Ryland. Can I say, are they Tom Ford?
My glasses are indeed Tom Ford. Mm-hmm. My admiration runs deeper than my glasses, though. I always admired the audacity of someone who was so accomplished in the fashion field to just decide one day, I want to make a movie. And he didn't just go and make a little movie. He went straight for the top. He went for artistic auteur territory.
Yeah, damn it.
And I think he nailed it.
He got it, didn't he, with Colin Firth? I mean, that put Colin Firth on the road to being rediscovered as an actor, and got him the Oscar a year later for
King's
Speech.
Into a different category, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
I loved The Single Man. I thought it was brilliant. And again, based on Christopher Isherwood's story. And again, Tom Ford's based on literary sort of origins here. A book called Tony and Susan, which I haven't read, by Austin Wright, which was a very popular novel in America. And again, he adapted it loosely here, which I think again nailed it. A brilliant film, Nocturnal Animals. It's about art and about the power of it. Yes, Jake Gyllenhaal plays Amy Adams' ex-husband, who sends her this manuscript in the post and says, I've dedicated this novel to you. And so she starts reading it, and so we go into the action of the novel in her head.
Because I'm not having seen the film, I've read a lot of coverage of it, and I am having trouble picturing how exactly this works, because you've got what's, I suppose, ostensibly the real story.
Yeah,
but then
Amy
you've
Adams
got
is a
this
miserable
other parallel
gallerist.
Thing.
So she starts reading the book, and we start seeing the action that she's reading. So it's a sort of film within a film.
Do you find that hard to be involved?
Well, it's
in
very
the
hard to explain on a sense of, and it sounds very difficult. But Tom Ford makes it look easy.
He just makes it work.
You know, I suppose it's like a fashion shoot within a kind of magazine, that you're kind of on one level, and then you're disappearing further into the story, and then it keeps coming back out, because the story is so shocking. Because it's like Tom Ford satire on the outside with this gallerist that's played by Mary Adams in the art world, all a bit ridiculous. But inside, this story is a vicious story of sort of rednecks running a family off the road in West Texas, where Tom Ford actually comes from, and you know, a story of murder and kidnap, and that's very violent, and Michael Shannon comes in as the sheriff. It's a great little novel, whatever the novel is that she's reading, but it's as she said, it's violent and it's sad and it's dedicated to me. It's a kind of revenge, this novel, on her, but the revenge she gets is from reading the shock of the novel, and we get to see that novel playing out, plus the sort of shock happening on the outside, and working out what the relationship was, where this art came from. It's a very complex film, but it's got Jake Gyllenhaal and Amy Adams and Michael Shannon and Michael Sheen in it. It's got good stars. It looks great. It's an art world satire at the same time. But it's more than a satire. It's about where art should be, because she's a gallerist who may have forgotten the power of art. And when she finally feels the true power of art from this novel, gets a real crackling kind of smack of violence and hurt and pain. I thought it was terrific. And I think we'll be seeing a lot more of it. I think it, you know, it's one of those films that's going to go all the way. If it's not one of the 10 best films at the Oscars nominated, I'd be very surprised. And Tom Ford, I mean, you know, it's extraordinary how he can make, you know, beautiful glasses and great films.
My goodness, I'm always so daunted and in awe of people who can be so talented in so many different
fields. I hate them.
I know. I was going to say that. I didn't want to use such a strong word, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
No, I agree. I mean, it's a tightrope act and very ambitious, and it could have fallen flat, and I don't think it does at all. And it's because he's so elegant and neat, it's done so beautifully as well. Damn him.
I literally cannot wait. That's Nocturnal Animals. It'll be out in the UK on November the 4th and in the US a little bit later in the month. And now for our final film for today, The Untamed. You could call this a bit of an erotic horror movie from Mexican director Amat Escalante. Jason, I'll let you explain to me what's exactly going on in this. I will say, though, the sound of an erotic horror movie, I'm already on board.
Yeah, and weird cult, don't forget, it's one of those films, I don't want to spoil anything, because at the start we see a woman sort of having ecstatic sex. I hadn't seen a lot of sex in Venice, actually.
Really?
Until this movie, yeah, on screen anyway. but, you know, this was something like, that's how it opens. This woman is pleasuring herself and into the full throes of ecstasy. And it's opened up a kind of Pandora's box of danger, because it's so pleasurable that nothing else will seem the same. And she sort of goes into the city of where they are in Mexico. It's kind of a grim sort of melodrama story going on. And she kind of brings a nurse into it and says, you should try this. And we don't quite know what this is. It's a place in the woods that you go. And it's so ecstatic for this young nurse that he dies. And then a murder mystery ensues. But then someone else discovers what's going on. And it is, you know, it's full on alien sex is happening in there.
There's a tentacled creature.
Kind of, you know, a Geiger kind of figure that's an octopusy, but can enter in various orifices. I mean, it's really out there, this film, and could risk kind of being, you know, you almost laugh at this kind of ridiculous, but it's so gritty, the Mexican storyline about sort of machismo and sex and kind of, you know, betrayal and stuff that's going on. It's quite gritty, that story.
It just in the description, it sort of sounds as though it's one of those bizarre attempts at a cautionary tale. It's not as if one of those stories that, you know, mother told you, if you do that too often, bad things will happen.
Yeah, I suppose because you've got the woods. I mean, there's a sort of bad, you know, big bad wolf element to it. If you go down to the woods today, you're certainly in for a big erotic surprise. I thought it was brilliant, I have to say. I mean, I was absolutely... I sort of often laugh at sort of ridiculous sci-fi, as I found with Arrival. But this kind of has this kind of body horror element to it.
If you own your ridiculousness, it's okay, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and also you contrast it with the everyday. I mean, the stuff that goes... I really like the sort of drama that's going on in the kind of gritty Mexican border town, where kind of, you know, there's betrayal and there's a kind of a sort of homosexuality kind of issue, where one guy who's married to a woman is having rough gay sex with her brother off screen. So I mean, that I loved that bit as well. I thought this was really dangerous and also kind of brave, and also good as a piece of world cinema in the Spanish language. I thought it was fantastic. If this wins the sort of Golden Lion, it would be a huge boost for it, because it's such an odd film, but I do think it's going to go far, and it's going to become a cult favourite. I was really impressed with this film, and it will be at the London Film Festival as well, a last minute entry, I'm informed.
Well, from our musical beginnings right up to an erotic horror, that brings us right about to the end of today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Thanks very much to my guest today, Jason Solomons. This has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time on Monday, when we'll be discussing art with Nancy Durrant. But for now, thanks for listening, and goodbye.